Welcome everyone to the Quill and Query podcast again. This is episode 2. I should have rehearsed because I forgot my line, but this is an indie publishing, reading, and writing podcast. My name is Brandon Hall. I am a aspiring author. I don't have any published books yet. Hopefully we'll have 2 this year. And I'm joined by Ash, or A.M. Acock, today. So Ash, you want to introduce yourself again?
Sure. For those who don't know, I am Ash Acock. My author name is A.M. Acock. I'm currently working on my dark fantasy novel, Filthy Hunger. And I'm also working on a story for Blades for Hire, which is an anthology that Brandon spearheaded. And that's me.
I feel like I'm going to have to figure out how to spice up my intro a little bit because I can't just say the same thing every time. But awesome.
I mean, until we're both published, that's kind of where we're at.
That's true. I mean, I am the same person week to week for the most part.
And some might not know us when they jump in, so it's all good.
Yeah. Okay, so today we're going to be talking about a lot of new reading and publishing and writing topics. Some of the ones we got for you today are content warnings in books, exploring themes in writing, writing processes and tools, and a few more. So before we get into all that, Ash, what are you reading? Is it the same as last week, or is there some new stuff?
It's about the same as last week. Not much has changed in my life. I feel like last week like flew by, so I didn't really feel like I had any time at all to do anything. So for those who don't know, I am reading The Prisoner's Throne, or continuing to, by Holly Black. I'm still also working my way through The Fragile Threads of Power by V.E. Schwab, and some ARC books that I haven't touched since last week, but that are still on the roster.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same boat. Still reading First Law in my ARCs.
Nice.
And I didn't get to make as much progress as I wanted because Easter weekend, I honestly forgot it was Easter weekend until Thursday night, and I was off Friday, so that's when I found out it was Easter weekend.
Yeah, it was super slow for us on Friday, and then I was like, oh yeah, we went to a NASCAR race, which is always fun, but
I've never been to one.
We don't actually go in, we just tailgate.
That sounds fun too.
Yeah, and then just Easter Sunday. But yeah, just completely forgot today.
Yeah. Okay, well, you know what we're reading? My reading will probably be the same next week, if I'm being honest. I'm a slow reader.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Book industry turns in. Oh, no, sorry. Before that, we have some upcoming indie releases. These ones are for April. Ash, would you like to read these, or would you like me to read the list?
I read last week, so why don't
that
you
is true. I keep putting you, I keep making you read things, and that's not very fair. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. No, I don't mind. I just, you know, we like the sound of your voice too, so go for it.
Okay, so first we have Origin by Lauren. I probably should have practiced how to say your name. Lauren Cipollo, April 9th. I'm very sorry if I butchered that or anyone else's names coming up. The Masks We Wear by B.D. Carpenter releases on April 11th. Salvage by our resident pirate captain S.M. Campbell, a novella, releases April 13th. 43 Degrees North by Alana Grace releases April 16th. The Air We Breathe by Leah Forrester, April 20th. Gods of Wrath and Ruin by D.M. Swartwout, April 23rd. Tea with the Minotaur by Adrian Hyatt, April 24th. And we have a few on April 24th. Behind the Mask by B. Declan, April 24th. Crown of Sorrows by Bex Gill, another anthology author, April 24th.
Woo-hoo.
Stranger in the Pod by Shazara Brooks, April 25th. And then Wicked Little Rabbit by Samantha Moran, April 30th. And actually, it looks like I missed one. The Shadow Agency by L.D. Valencia. I did not get a date for this one. I just know it's releasing in April. So just check every day or at the end of the month, whenever you want. And I will reach out to him and get a concrete date when I get this episode uploaded.
I also have one to add that I forgot to type into the shared.
Oh, yes, please.
It is Yeah, Son of Astoria by J.B. Wright, which debuts on April 23rd. So
very cool.
There you go.
Yeah, April 20th through like the 25th seems like a busy period for indie yeah. releases. So I'm glad I'm not releasing yeah. anything in April.
No, we just have our things due by end of April. So.
Yeah, some of us. Anyway. I promise, guys, that I actually do stuff. Like, I do read and I do write, even though it might not seem like it. I also kind of roast myself a little too hard sometimes, and I realize it comes off like I don't accomplish anything. But I promise I get stuff done.
Oh. I feel the same way, but it's all right. We're holding each other accountable while understanding that life is literally nuts. So
yeah, very much.
We're being kind to ourselves.
So I think that's it for the intro. We can probably move right into the indie publishing discussion. I think you did most of the work this week on these topics because I could not find anything. So,
Well, I do research for a living, so I'm a little bit more like, all right, how narrow can we get? But yeah, so we have a couple things. So the AAP, which is the American Association of Publishers, every year releases a report that kind of just breaks down publishing and the trends in publishing, publishing sales, etc. This actually came up in my own work this week, so I was like, ah, there we go. Just a couple fun facts. I would definitely take note of this. It's good to just kind of see where the numbers are at with publishing, even trad publishing, which is usually where these kind of numbers tend to sit and are preferred over maybe self-publishing or indie publishing. However, still good to know the market that you're in. So just a few fun notes. Sales overall rose 0.4% in 2023 over 2022, with total sales reaching 12.57 billion with a B. So that's pretty crazy. In the adult segment, digital audio sales jumped 16% to a total of 743 million. Overall, I think digital audio slash audiobooks are just becoming generally more popular, which makes sense. Obviously, we see a lot of that on TikTok, but I thought that was interesting. Probably the biggest and most important number for us in the self-publishing space are ebook sales. Had another great year, or another year of small declines, sorry, and dropped 1.4% to 834 billion total sales. And in children slash YA, the 2.6 sales decline was due to a drop in hardcover sales, which also makes sense. Hardcover's more expensive, soft covers, not as much. So yeah, some fun facts on those. It's a really quick like summary, the report itself. So yeah. Some crazy numbers if you care about numbers.
I am very much a numbers person, and I have not followed these sales reports. So is this like a yearly thing, or do they do monthly, or?
From what I know, they do snapshots either every month or every quarter, and then they do the year-end wrap-up. But I linked it in there, so maybe we can share that. If we like post anywhere specifically, we can share that link. Good to just like follow the site every now and then. They always release like publishing news either generally or by the author or by genre. But again, those are mostly trad publishing numbers. So but anyway, still good to know.
Yeah, that I'll definitely be keeping an eye on those numbers moving forward now that you shared that. Yeah. I think it's interesting that the only, I was going to say audio is the only sector that seemed to like grow by a significant margin, but I guess sales in general also rose by 0.4%. So there's still some growth
just
overall.
Those smaller just those smaller segments, which makes sense. I think the reason why I mentioned ebook is because I went into like the Amazon topic next, which I thought was interesting. From September of last year, of September 2023, this kind of happened, but Amazon limited authors to self-publishing 3 books a day. I guess beforehand, if I remember correctly, there wasn't a limit. So AI-generated content and AI-generated books and guides, they were just flooding the market. And so it was really hard, I guess, for Amazon to parse out what was real and what wasn't. So now you can publish 3 books a day if you'd like, which still sounds insane to me. I just don't quite... I'm unsure.
It's funny you say that, because when I saw you add this to the document, I thought I misread it as 3 books per year, and I was like, I'm still never going to touch that. And then I saw three books
yeah,
per day,
right.
And I was like, oh,
yeah.
Okay. I don't know who's out here publishing 3 books a day, but...
I don't know either.
Other
so
than
know
AI-generated this, content,
yeah.
I guess, but...
So this kind of is like a weird niche overlap for me. I do a lot of... Yeah, exactly. That's still going to be three,
yeah.
like, AI-generated. However, I do know that, like, this is, like, this niche interest of me being, like, anti-MLM, and then seeing a lot of scammers who, like, put, like, how to make $1 million, like, obviously they're just sharing the same format over and over and mm-hmm. then putting them into the market, too. So there's, like, a little bit of that. But I guess... Amazon already offers over 200 books with ChatGPT listed as author or co-author, which just is, I was already afraid that was going to happen,
yeah.
but obviously it's already happening.
I mean, I guess I can like appreciate I'm just assuming here, but it sounds like they require the AI generated books to at least be disclosed are you not sure about that?
You know what? That's actually really good. I can try and follow that up real quick. Because let's see.
I am curious because
as if I can't. Okay, it's not an easily findable answer, but mm-hmm. I will put that in the notes for next week because I think that's super interesting, and maybe we can
yeah.
just talk more about AI next week
sure.
because that is a really interesting question. But yeah, I guess so one of the quotes from this article is like from this man Brett Schickler. No hate to Brett Schickler, but he's in this article, so we're gonna say
okay.
He says, the idea of writing a book finally seemed possible. Brett Schickler, a salesman in Rochester, New York, tells Reuters, I thought I can do this. He created a 30-page illustrated children's ebook in hours by using ChatGPT to generate blocks of text from his prompts. The book, now listed on Amazon for $3 on Kindle or $10 printed, aims to teach kids about saving money. So then it kind of like goes on about that. So it seems like it's allowable, which is just an interesting concept overall of like what constitutes, are you an author if ChatGPT helps write your novel and
yeah.
all these other.
I'll definitely try
yeah.
to save a lot of my thoughts on that for when we
for
actually
next
have yeah next
sure,
week
totally.
But going back to the 3 books a day thing, I think that it's interesting that that was like, I feel like that limit doesn't really accomplish a whole lot. Like, they can't do 100 books a day, I guess, but 3 per day
yeah.
is still a lot. Like, there's no way
yeah.
anyone writing, like, without having AI do the majority of the work for them. I don't think there's anybody out there putting out 3 books a day, or even, I don't know, about 1 book a day for that matter. That's just insane.
Right. I don't know anyone, unless you have like a collection of novellas that you're ready to release at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like even day, like if you just broke that up into 2 days, that still wouldn't be a big issue.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because according to Amazon, they have not seen a spike in their publishing numbers, but it's just in order to protect from abuse of potential bots. So I wonder if that's
so
true, but
it
anyway.
Sounds like they're saying it was more in anticipation of something than in response to something then.
Yeah.
Which is
yeah.
understandable. I'm honestly surprised though that it wasn't getting flooded with, I mean, maybe to
yeah.
some extent it was, but.
Yeah. Oh, so, and apparently to answer your question,
mm-hmm.
The 3 book limit announcement comes a week after Amazon introduced the requirement for authors to inform the company when their content is AI generated.
Okay.
And have a new set of guidelines. So yeah, I think I appreciate that, but I also, yeah, I'm curious to learn more.
Yeah. I definitely think we'll have a lot to talk about next week when it comes to AI, because I have a lot of thoughts, especially
yeah,
as someone
yeah,
who
we'll
works
make that.
In software development, where we do have to use and be aware of artificial intelligence to some degree. So,
no, definitely. Yeah, super interesting. Anyway, what is your new? We'll move on from Amazon and AI. Do you have any weekly? Yeah, do you have any weekly news?
I'm sorry, you cut out for me for a second. Did you?
Oh, sorry.
I didn't hear what you said.
Did you have any news? No, it's okay. Did you have any publishing business topics?
Not really news, but it was an interesting conversation that keeps popping up on my book talk this week that I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on. It was content warnings in books. So this seemed to spark a little bit of a friendly debate, I'll say, on my following circle about, one, are content warnings necessary? Two, how specific and granular do you get with a content warning? And then also, I guess going back to the first point, as a reader, do you look for content warnings? So there's a lot of discussion in kind of different areas around this topic. So I wanted to get your thoughts first, if you're okay with it. But how do you feel about content and trigger warnings, I guess, as a writer? Is that something you want to include in your work, or that you plan to, or not really?
Yeah, it is interesting. I personally didn't really even consider the concept of trigger warnings in writing until very, very recently, until I think book talk. I think a couple of advanced reader copies in the last year that I've gotten have had, for the first time, trigger warnings, unless they're very explicitly like Kindle Unlimited, like, you know, dark fantasy, erotica, or whatever.
Yeah.
I think in mainstream, it just never really was something I noticed or saw. And so I, again, never considered it. Have I considered it now? Yes. I think it's just nice to have. I think it's important for people to kind of know what they're getting into, especially since I think more and more books are coming out with really dark themes, depending on the genre. So I will probably incorporate it into mine, only because I don't want someone to be triggered by my work, even though it does touch on a lot of like kind of taboo stuff and, you know, trauma. I also understand the other argument of like, that's just, I think books have just always been that kind of surprise, and that's what reviews are for. And so you can check reviews before. It's not up to the author to kind of hold your hand through their novel.
Yeah.
So I understand that perspective too. I think you lose more by not including it, because you might actually lose readers potentially if you have such dark themes in there.
Yeah.
But you have nothing to lose if you do include them. You know what I mean? Like, if someone's like, oh, this, you know, liberal has trigger warnings at the beginning of their book, and the trigger warnings is like a mile long, it's like, okay, like, but also that's in the book. So it's not like it's not already going to be in there. So anyway, those are my initial thoughts.
That's a fair point. I don't think, barring a few maybe extreme examples, because I'm sure they're out there, but I don't think you're going to turn anyone away by having some type of content warning. And if you do, they were probably going to drop it for some reason or another anyway. But
Right.
Yeah, no, so there's definitely like several camps on this topic that I could see. Like, there's the extreme, like, I want everything that happens kind of on the front page, like a shopping list of triggers to a certain extent. And then there's, I think this is the camp that I kind of fall into, is providing like a generalized content warning, kind of like you would get with, if you go to a movie and you see the big, you know, the green screen with the rating PG-13 because of this, or you buy a game and you look on the back of the case and it tells you why it's rated, what it's rated, but it's not very like it's not super specific. It's more generalized, like, okay, there's sexual content, there's graphic violence,
yes.
And things like that. So I think that's kind of where I fall as far as how I'm going to approach it, because, one, I think it is kind of nice to have, especially so readers with, you know, certain traumas or triggers can kind of be aware going into it. And I think it is kind of weird that books are the only, like, major form of media that don't have a regulatory ratings board of some kind.
Yeah.
Like, you can't really go to a movie or buy a game and be shocked by the content and not blame yourself, because the ratings are right there. Like, you can, unless you're ignoring
yeah.
them. But with a book, you can, I guess, be surprised at the content if you're,
yeah.
like, not following the marketing and stuff like that. I also, on the other side of that, I don't want to put like a huge list of spoilers at the beginning of my
yes.
novel either. And I've seen some people who really do want like more specific than what I'm personally willing to put, I guess. Like I saw
yeah.
someone, it was, I believe it was an indie author, say that they got a bad review because a character was betrayed by a love interest, and love interest betrayal or something along those lines was not included in the trigger warnings. So it like hyper I can't
yeah.
say the word, but unfortunately
hyper specifies or
yeah.
yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't, even after spending so much time with my novel, I don't think I'll remember everything like to that degree. Like, I'm sure there's things that I would forget, so I'd rather just provide that blanket warning at the beginning, like, okay, there's graphic
yeah.
violence. What do you think graphic violence is? Like, is that too much for you, or is that
yeah.
not? Like, if there's specific examples of graphic violence that you're not okay with, maybe check out some
right.
reviews or something, or ask someone who's read it, or ask me
yeah.
if you can reach out to me, for sure. I'll answer your questions. I just,
yeah.
I don't necessarily want to put a huge spoiler list at the beginning of my novel, and I don't think I would be
so
able
I've...
to account for everything anyway, but I've rambled enough. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you didn't ramble. I wanted to clarify that that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like the concept of, like, broad generalizations of trigger warnings at the beginning. Like, this novel contains, like, you know, intense descriptions of violence, heavy sexual content. You know,
yeah.
that way you're like, okay, this is a rated R, right?
Yeah.
This is not a PG-13. This is not a harder G. It's like,
yeah.
we're getting into the nitty-gritty. And also, maybe, I think I've seen a few authors do this, like, offering more detail on their websites
mm-hmm.
or being like, if you want the full list, go to the whatever.
Yeah.
If that matters, but to your point, and I wanted to agree with this as well, was like, you're not going to be able to please anybody or you're not going to be able to please everybody. So a trigger that you might be like, oh, there's only like one scene in that might be essential to somebody else, but
mm-hmm.
it's slipped through, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, it is so subjective that, you know, you can't, I don't mind a long laundry list, but
mm-hmm.
myself personally will not include one. I
yeah.
will, however, still have like brief descriptions of the generals, because I think it is important. It's like, if I walk into a Quentin Tarantino, I know what I'm about to walk into.
Yeah.
But if it's a first-time author I've never read before, and
mm-hmm.
it's pretty dark, it would be nice to know what am I getting into.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And no shade to anybody who does provide,
mm-mm.
like, a laundry list of specific triggers, by
Amen.
The way.
Yep.
I admire your ability to do that, but,
I know.
Again, it's just
yeah.
personal preference, I think, and I don't think
Agreed.
Any approach is really right or wrong.
It's interesting. I'm now on Storygraph. I don't
mm-hmm.
know if you're on Storygraph.
No, but I keep hearing about it.
Yeah, I really like it. One, it's really easy to switch over. You can just like download your Goodreads and then upload it to them, and they like populate it for you, so
oh,
you don't
cool.
have to like go back and do that. Also, not related to Amazon, which is always a bonus.
Yeah.
But they do have, when you review a book, they have a section now for trigger warnings that you would give as a reviewer to
mm-hmm.
other reviewers to warn them about what triggers there are. And so I think maybe that's a really good medium between the authors like us who are just going to put generalizations, and then the reviews that can be really hyper-specific of, hey, if this is a trigger for you, you can see that in the reviews itself. So something to also consider in the future. Maybe asking reviewers to be more specific too. You know, it's like, hey, when you're sending out your ARC reviews, ask that as a part of the feedback of, hey, like, if you're triggered by anything, could you let me know what it is, if you were able to keep reading, if you feel comfortable. Of course, not everyone's going to feel comfortable with that, but if you're open to giving that type of feedback, it would be super helpful, because then you have almost like a master list of potential triggers if you want to include that somewhere else.
Yeah,
but also when people review, that's also a something they can pull from.
Hi, Adrian. I just noticed your message.
Hi, Adrian.
but yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think reviews are a great space to share triggers as well. I actually didn't think of asking my future ARC reviewers to do that, but that's something I will definitely make a note of, because I think that will be, like you said earlier, I don't think it hurts anything. So. Yeah, I think that covers all our indie publishing topics. So we have some interesting writing topics to go over today.
We do.
I think one that we briefly touched on last week that you wanted to ask more about, or I wanted to ask more about, one of us, I don't remember. But before we do that, let's do our weekly accountability check-in for our works in progress.
Are you sure? Are you sure you want to do this?
Actually... Guys, no, we're going to skip this week.
So that actually made me start to cry a little bit. I'm not going to lie. hey, I got 600 words yesterday.
That's more than I got yesterday. So.
All right. I also got a tracker. I bought a tracker on Etsy, an Excel spreadsheet that's already built.
Oh, okay.
You can input your words and it adjusts and lets you know if you've hit your daily goal and how many days left you have to reach that goal and how many words per day you need to write. And then it charts and graphs it. So if you're a visual person, it kind of helps to see how quickly you've gone. However, I did not hit my daily goal yesterday, but I got words on paper, which is
Always a good thing.
Better than last week. Yep.
I will definitely have to check out that Excel spreadsheet, because something I've noticed recently is seeing a visual of my progress makes me want to make more progress, and it helps a lot. This is completely unrelated to writing, but a game I'm playing has a progress tracker that lets you know how close you are to being done with like that given level in the game. And I've been struggling to focus on games lately, but with this one, I can stay focused because I'm like, oh, okay, I'm 70% of the way through, so I can get out this last 30% and then turn it off. So I think having something similar for writing would probably be very useful for me, because just being able to visualize my progress makes me more productive.
It does. It makes a difference. And Adrian, it is so cool. I paid $6 for it, but there is a free app on, I should have maybe put that as my like tool of the week. But it's called Word Tracker on either, I have an iPhone. So if you have an iPhone, it's on Apple Store. And it's very similar. You can put in your project and then put in how many words / when you want the deadline to be by, and then it'll give you how many words a day you need to write. However, I think the interface of just like a broad one sheet Excel spreadsheet for me visually, just like you said, works a little bit better, though Word Tracker is free. So if you want a free version of that, that's there. Also different versions on Etsy. But yeah, like you said, it is really helpful to see either how far away you are or how close you are or what you need to do. And those stats kind of matter. And then you start to kind of see patterns of like what days a week you write better on. And then you can like plan around that. So, yeah, super, super interesting.
So I do have a follow-up question to that. How good do you have to be at Excel to use that spreadsheet? Do you have to like be a pretty talented Excel user, or because I haven't touched Excel in forever and I don't know what I'm looking at when it comes to spreadsheets for the most part, so
So Adrian, it is a download, just to answer your question first. Yeah, so it's just like an Etsy download, or it's the app itself. It is, so when you download it, at least the one I saw slash also bought, as long as you understand that you need to click inside the box and type a number, that's all you need to know about Excel.
I can do that.
I'm a little bit more proficient, but it's already set up for you, and they have directions about like where you put what. Okay. And if you hover over the box, it'll be like, here's where you put how many words you already have. Mm-hmm. So it comes already with kind of just like a self-help, like fill in the blank guide. I did have an issue with they had a coding issue. So mm-hmm. I like reached back out to the folks, and they were like, we've got it fixed for you. So now it works. And it did. And so it is super easy and super straightforward, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. If you have like just a very basic understanding of Excel, also works in Google Sheets.
Okay, so cool. I should reword what I said. I don't completely suck at Excel. I'm just not an expert. I can do basic stuff, but like click in the box.
Yes. I mean, I meant that as like for anyone else who is like, I don't know Excel at all. Mm-hmm. For you and I, we could even just like adjust things if we needed to, or like, you know, maybe do a little bit more, but I cannot code or like build something like that. Yeah. So for us daily average Excel users, I know you probably use it every day. I use it every day. It's an easy peasy, simple tool to use.
Very cool.
Not trying to insult your Excel proficiency.
No, Brandon. Of all the tools I use, that is the one I try to avoid the most, just because I'm more proficient in literally anything else.
Yeah, dude, for real.
Okay, did you give your progress update, or did we skip over that? I know you said you wrote 600 words.
I did. I get 600 words for the anthology. Mm-hmm. I am terrified. So that's all I have to say. I'm just worried that it's not going to be that good. That like I have it in my head.
Yeah.
And it's just going to be like, oh, you have like, there will be a ton of edits, obviously, but like, I don't know. This in my head.
Yeah.
I just wanted to translate, you know?
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest struggles for me too, is it looks good up here, but sometimes on the paper, not so much.
Yeah. You're like, maybe not.
Yeah. Well, my progress update is pretty much the same as last week. Still on Act 2 of A Knight of Knives. I will be on that for a long while until I get to Act 3 and I pick up some more momentum. It's just, like I said, I don't know what it is. The middle part always gets me. I'm working on it, though.
Is there anything you want to workshop through? Or, like, feeling-wise? Not necessarily, like, content, but, like, any hiccups? Any, like, how are you feeling about it?
I'm still trying to figure out what my struggle is. Like, I don't even know. It feels like there's a few different things that it could be, but I'm, like, the act, first is the act of sitting down and getting actual words out. Like, I'll sit in front of the computer, but a lot of times it'll end up just be staring at a blank screen or a blank page on the Word document. And I didn't have that problem really with Act 1 because I don't know. I guess the beginning momentum of starting a story is easier for me than continuing one. I may need to revisit my outline and kind of rework some plot elements. I think some of it might be uncertainty on a few outline choices that I made, and I'm kind of struggling to commit to them. And then there's also, you know, now that we're talking about it, I'm starting to kind of put the pieces together.
There you go.
Magic is a big struggle for me. It's
okay.
I prefer soft magic. I know some people like harder magic systems. At least for this story, I'm going with a soft magic system.
Could you define, like, for those who might not like know or understand fantasy, can you kind of define what soft versus high is?
Yeah, for sure. I'll kind of give a brief explanation of what my understanding of it is, and if you catch anything that I'm not quite correct on, just feel free to correct me. But yeah, so a hard magic system, from what I hear, more like Brandon Sanderson, you have hard defining rules of like the cost of the magic, how it can be used, what it can be used for. So I guess if you think of like a video game, maybe there's rules and systems in place for how the magic works, and it's well understood, kind of maybe sometimes leaning more towards science in some stories. And then a softer magic system is less understood and a little more mysterious, a little more wonder, I guess. There's not as many defined like rules, and kind of I'm struggling here because soft magic doesn't have it has less rules than hard magic, so it's harder to define. But I've always preferred the magic that I don't fully understand, like there could be more to it, or I guess I don't know. I like the more mysterious stuff. But on that topic, what do you prefer? Do you have a preference for softer hard magic, or?
Well, I think you did a great job in defining both. I think that is what the hard and fast rules and the cost, I think, is the number one that makes the difference between soft magic systems and like more concrete hard magic systems. Mm-hmm. Also a great example of Brandon Sanderson versus like someone more of like Sarah J. Maas, right? Where you don't really have like a reasoning, they just do have it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like unlimited in its value. I really like rules. I like rules, not in my daily life, but I like rules when it comes to reading. And like, these are the parameters that these characters have to work within. And so when I write, I think mine kind of tips in the balance of between both. I think because there are gods involved, those are the limitations that are present. And also they can only go so far before there is like a kickback concept of like, no, this is the cost of that magic. But kind of going off of what you're saying, it's really hard to define those rules, even if it's soft, because you still have to kind of have a bubble in which they operate. Like, it can't just be like here and there, like someone can shoot electricity out of their fingers and the other can swim underwater, right? Like there has to be some structure it. And that can be really, really challenging, because if you're a soft magic person, you don't want the reader to feel like they are bogged down by all these ifs, ands, or buts. But you also just, like I said, can't have it be willy-nilly. So yeah, that's a really hard, it's hard, and it'll change, which is the crappy thing about it all when you write. It's like two revisions down the road, and it's just like, God, I gotta change this. It's just not working.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think my struggle when it comes to magic is, so the first act is very light on magic use. It's not really used by either of the two POVs that I'm writing. They're not magic users. It's side characters and people they work with. So as the story progresses, magic becomes more of a focal point and it has a bigger importance building up all the way to the end. But I think I'm struggling to figure out how to do it naturally, like without making the magic feel forced into the story, because on the one hand it's a necessary part of the plot I built, but it's also not been present for the first dozen or so chapters. Not really. I mean, it's been discussed, but it's not been really seen in action. And so trying to figure out how to go from just having it in the background as part of the world building to now it's taking center stage in the plot is also a big struggle of mine. And then it being a soft magic system, like it's not an excuse to just make the magic do whatever for sure, because that's not what soft magic is. It's just I'm trying not to, I keep leaning more towards hard, like almost by mistake, just in trying to introduce the magic to the story naturally. Some rules are developing and I'm trying to keep it on the mysterious side so that I don't lock myself in a box. But yeah, magic and the act of getting words on paper are the biggest struggles I'm facing right now.
I think also two great topics we can discuss more in the craft section at a later date, because I think those are what a lot of people struggle with, me included. It's
That's good.
It's not just you. I'm having a hard time with mine as well, creating those parameters and what are the stakes. Like, if you use this, because you know, one group of people, it's God-given, but if it's God-given, there's still restrictions on what you can do, and then you know, all these things, and it's like, you get to a scene or, you know, a part in the book and you're like, oh, the rules I've created don't work here.
Yeah.
So like, I either have to change the plot and how we got here, or I have to change the magic system, which just has a trickle down effect. So
yeah,
you're not alone, but it's not impossible, and you will, you'll figure it out.
We will get through it. One day it'll click.
Yep.
And I know when I hit Act 3, I'm going to have a lot more momentum because the end will be in sight. It's just the middle part is always going to be the hardest. It's just how it is for me with everything. But
yeah, no, I totally understand. And maybe that's like an indicator that there needs to be a little bit more in the first act.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe a little bit more setup, a little bit more like fleshing out, even if it's not directly in use.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe just like some more.
I am actually, that's okay. We'll move on. I am actually revisiting the first act a little bit though, especially when I'm like in the middle of a chapter, in act two chapter, and I'm not getting anything done. I'm like, okay, let me do something productive.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, sorry for my long-winded progress update.
No, I asked.
Writing struggles.
I completely asked. I absolutely just wanted to delve deeper, especially for a struggle. Like, that's the whole point of this, is to also kind of go into it, you know? Like, what are you doing?
Thank you for the lightning
and
bolts.
And how difficult it is.
Michael?
Thanks. Or Michael?
I always forget how to say your name, and I'm so sorry, but thank you for the lightning bolts.
I think that's our first. You're our first ever.
It looks like we got two each too, so that's nice. I don't think I've ever gotten any of those on the live, so
either. That's crazy.
But okay, on to our weekly writing topics. First up we have, sorry, did I interrupt you?
Oh no, I was just repeating in a very voice what you were saying.
I think this is the one we were touching on a little bit last week, that you wanted to dive into a little more themes in writing and kind of what topics and themes and issues we both want to explore when it comes to our writing. So do you want me to go first, or do you want to answer that?
That is totally up to you. I don't mind either way.
Okay. So I think for me, I guess I'll start because I have a habit of making you start.
Okay.
I know. I keep mentioning it. But yeah, so I think in my own writing, some of the things I want to touch on are things that I don't, and it could just be I'm not well read enough, but there's certain issues that I don't feel or see represented often enough in the fantasy that I do read. So I think some of the ones that come to mind are mental health issues, and very specific ones that I don't really want to touch on right now, but kind of the lesser explored areas of mental health. Like I've seen, and especially in recent years, stuff like depression, anxiety, and PTSD get a lot more attention in fantasy and just literature in general. That said, I think there's still a lot of mental health topics and issues that haven't been touched on that I have a lot of personal experience with. So that's another thing I like to do. I like to write based on my own experience because I can back it up to some extent. Like, I'm not writing about someone else's experience. I'm writing about the things that I myself have some level of understanding about. So, mental health is a big theme in every story that I work on. A Knight of Knives, my Blades for Hire story, all of them will deal with mental health to some extent. I'm drawing a blank on the train of thought I was trying to follow there, but mental health, and then other themes and issues. I kind of need to think on that because mental health is so like at the forefront for me that the other stuff kind of just comes naturally following that, if that makes sense. Like usually when I sit down to write something, there'll be a core issue or theme that I decide on early, because I like to write stuff that has some meaning, at least to me, that's not just pure entertainment. I like to kind of weave in some type of message there, not being like preachy or anything, but just go ahead.
No, you're good. I think I wanted to hop in on that because one of the biggest number one requested kind of manuscript concepts from the agents that I pitched to a couple weeks ago were neurodivergency and stories and slash like mental health issues and discussions of topics and subjects like that. Also, hi, Gray. That's my brother in the comments. Silly. Also, he must have said something bad because it limited the comment that he made.
Don't get yourself banned.
Yeah, come on, Gray. And I did mean to cut you off, so if you'd like to continue.
Oh, no, you're okay. Sometimes I
just wanted to jump in and be like, that's important. Yeah.
No, you actually, I was looking for the word there, and you said it, neurodivergent. There's a lot of mental health issues and things like that that I don't see represented very often in fantasy, some that I have personal experience with, some that people I know suffer from. So I think one thing that I've heard other authors echo is if you want to see things in writing or in fantasy that you don't see, then it helps to write it yourself. Like, ultimately, we write what we know, and you can't necessarily wait for someone who's never experienced what you want to read about to write it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
So, it's, yeah, sorry. I was just going off of what you said, and thank you for getting that word out for me because I couldn't remember it.
Neurodivergent. It's not a daily use in my vocabulary, so.
No.
It's totally understandable. Yeah, I think that's definitely a super important topic, period. And to not see it really represented in fantasy is something that's kind of glaringly obvious, but not discussed. It's because we're so, in my opinion, used to certain themes in the fantasy. And again, this is like very fantasy heavy, this topic, just because that's what we're writing. But I think, like, you know, post J.R.R. Tolkien, a lot of it comes from this good versus evil, right? Even Harry Potter and a lot of the late 80s, like Game of Thrones, like, you know, even though Game of Thrones kind of grayed everything, it's like there's no good or there's no bad. But these kind of lofty themes of good versus evil, like my struggle versus your struggle, and I think I've seen a lot more on the shelf of these still grand themes, but what's driving these characters is not necessarily honor or glory or any of the things that we've seen. It is it's like I'm trying to overcome this one thing in myself, whether that be reflected in the magic system or whatever. So, yeah, I think I do the same thing. I think mental health is definitely number one, but also like PTSD in mine, like kind of more of a religious exploration of or the negative sides of religion, period. Also the concepts of like, not everyone is good or bad, right? Like both sides are wrong. So what do you do when both sides are wrong or built on a lie and you're at war with one another? What do you do? So yeah, like some soft themes there to explore later, but I think it's essential that if you want to write about your own experience, you have to write it because no one else is going to do it in the way that fits the best for you, like you said.
And I one thing I've often thought about specifically in regards to mental health representation in fantasy is part of the reason I think it's difficult is because a lot of fantasy is set like in a setting that's pre any mental health understanding whatsoever. Like it has based his like medieval fantasy is pretty common. And if you've ever read about how they dealt with mental health issues back then, it's understandable that it's difficult to represent in a fantasy story. So I think there's a challenge there as well. But yeah,
definitely. I don't think I want to go ahead.
I was just going to say, I also really liked the other themes you said you want to explore, like the religious stuff and what do you do when both sides are kind of in the wrong. That's my favorite stuff to read is when I don't want to pick a side, but I'm kind of like told to, and it's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that was my that was a part of my pitch. It was the kind of the ending line, the crux of it was like, you know, they both have to decide whether or not their kingdoms are even worth saving, mm-hmm. because they've found this understanding of like, no, both are built off of a lie. So we're in charge. What do we do? Do we try and rule from a place of understanding like that, or do we even try and rule at all? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's, I feel like that's, yeah, that doesn't really get touched on as much, the concept of like rulership and ownership. It's like, even if you own the sins of your past, like you can argue the U.S. government does or does not do, but if a government of any kind or a, you know, monarchy tries to own the past, well, then going forward, how do you do that? Can you do that? Or do you have to rebuild from the ground up? So, yeah, it's complicated and it's strange. And it's hard to write about because I'm no political scientist.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do that. But I guess that's putting in, like, what would I do? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, those are all great themes. So I'm excited to hear that those are kind of what you want to explore in your writing, because it just makes me more excited to read your stuff. But... No pressure, by the way.
No pressure. Oh, God. I know. As Bex has finished hers and everyone else has also finished theirs. So, yeah.
If it makes you feel better, the long story group are all in the same boat right now. So.
Yeah, for sure. It is just a slog. And yeah, we'll get there. And it'll be great. It'll be perfect.
Well, we talked a lot about themes, but... another topic that I want to talk about today is success as an author. Mm. So a lot of people measure success differently. And I think, especially mm-hmm. in the indie author space, everyone kind of has a different goal. I mean, obviously you want to sell books, you want people to like them. That's kind of the basic reason that you're doing this to begin with. But everyone has different goals and different metrics of success. So mm-hmm. I guess... I'll pitch a question to you first. Do you have like certain criteria or goals that you want yourself to meet on like a specific timeline? I guess what defines success for you as an author when it comes to like your debut and future works?
Yeah, I think for someone like me who doesn't really like to talk about themselves, it's kind of a strange topic. And yeah. I'm glad we're talking about it because, of course, you don't want to say sales, mm-hmm. right? Because then it just makes you look like an ass. But that is one of the goals, right? Like, yeah. to me, success in a very, like, day-to-day surface-level concept is being able to quit my 8-to-5 and mm-hmm. say, like, this is what I do full-time, enough to not lose my lifestyle as it is now. Mm-hmm. If even I were just to keep my salary and I'm just writing books for my career, that's success to me. Mm-hmm. Of course, you want to be like a, you know, G.R. Martin and a Sarah J. Maas kind of situation always. Where you're like, I am making millions. Great. Mm-hmm. However, I think that's, you know, I would like to be a writer, as I would like to say that on my resume.
Yeah.
So that's what like surface level success for me is. I do think there is also a sense of more like, I don't know, lasting success is I want to be able to have my books in a library somewhere and then still be referenced as a good series to read mm-hmm. 20 years down the line. I think Anne McCaffrey is one of those writers for me that I just really admire and love. And she, you know, wrote Dragon Riders of Pern in the 80s. Same with G.R. Martin. Like, his stuff has been popular. But even if it hadn't had the success of Game of Thrones, it was still such, like, a big fantasy series that, like, yeah. every dude in a library or bookstore will be like, yo, you gotta read G.R. Martin's Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think same with, like, Brandon Sanderson. Two men out of three, but... that's, you know, that's also another topic. So that's for me. Lasting success is people referencing the series as a really either good place to intro to fantasy, mm-hmm. despite it being dark and kind of more of the high fantasy side, but still being like, oh yeah, my favorite series was this as a kid, and then gifting it, and then it being passed, and like, yeah. So that's it for me.
Yeah, those all sound like great goals, and I don't think you're being too lofty there at all or anything. I think most people would say something along the same lines. Like, you want people to talk about your work to kind of, to spread it by word of mouth so you don't have to do all the work. But, because, you know, naturally, if they're sharing it with people, that means they enjoyed it and they want to share it with other people. Yeah. And that's kind of, ultimately, the more people that hear your story, the more exposure you get, the more sales and everything like that. And I know you said, you know, saying sales is kind of like a taboo thing, but ultimately everyone wants to sell their product. So it's not it's not a bad thing to want good sales at all. But
show me the money.
Yeah.
But I mean, some people, that's all it is, and that's fine, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's like, that was one of the great kind of points that the speaker at the conference made, where he was like, you know, there are two types of authors. There are authors who want to sell books and usually quantity, and then there are authors who don't care about the money at all and just want to get their story out.
Yeah.
And you can like be both, but you're either one forward or the other.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, you're either goal-wise, you've got like your business plan, you're ready to rock, you're all these things, especially in the self-published space.
Mm-hmm.
Or you just have people who just wrote a book and they just want to share it with friends and family, and that's also just as valid.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, money's taboo and no one wants to be selfish.
Yeah. Well, I will gladly say that I do want my book to sell well.
Cheers to that.
But, no, I think, so for me, I've struggled a long time with getting to a financially stable spot in life to where I don't necessarily want, even if I could, I don't know if I'd replace my day job with writing. So it's not, personally, just for me, that's not an end goal. Sure. Like, if I could do that, that would be great. But I don't think that's something that I'm looking at as like, I mean, obviously, if I get to that point, it means I've attained a certain level of success. But it's not something I'm striving for at the moment. I've kind of set my sales and business goals relatively low for my first, for A Knight of Knives and for the anthology. First for the anthology, that's all going to charity. So really just, it's all about like the exposure and lifting up the other artists who are working on it and stuff like that. So if when it comes to that, if the anthology provides even just a little boost to both the charity and everyone involved as far as like lifting their creative voice, I'll consider that project pretty successful. And then when it comes to other stories, ultimately I just want to share them. I know that's that's very cliche to say, but it's kind of like what you said, like for some people writing is very much a business, for others it's very much about the artistic side, and usually you'll fall somewhere in between. I think I'm somewhere in between, leaning more towards the, I just want to get my art, my stories out there. Then financial success in doing so would obviously be very nice, but I've always wanted to publish stories, so the just getting them out there is really my end goal. And if I get it out there and it gets, you know, I hear that people are enjoying it and it sells, it hits my sales goal that I've set, which is pretty low, I'll consider it successful. But yeah, I
all just as valid.
But yeah, those are my success metrics and my goals kind of for these first two projects. Is there anything sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say I think that's what I've seen a lot of is like a good in between of both of us of like, oh, I'm like more like money forward. And then another is like, no, I just want to get my story out there. And I think that's the best part about self-publishing. If one, you go the trad route and that's not necessarily working for you, then that's why self-publishing is such a great also option. And also some people are just like, I don't even care about trad publishing, I'm just gonna do it. And I think that's, you know, even though we're limited to 3 Amazon book uploads a day, still very easy to do.
I've just got,
and can be super lucrative. If at the conference, at the conference the guy was like, what did he say? Oh shoot, I just lost it. Oh no, I had it.
It's okay. I do that all the time.
So good. Oh, A woman who came to him at a conference was like, yeah, so I don't have any questions for you. I just want to get, like, I don't know. She wanted feedback on something, but she didn't have any really big questions to ask.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, well, like, give me, what are your stats, you know? And she's making, like, over six figures by self-publishing Ooh. These books. And he was like, sit down. I have to ask you questions now. Like, okay, give me your rundown. And so she had just done really good marketing for her own work. But she saw very small sales the first book, mm-hmm. small sales the second book. When she published her third, her sales skyrocketed because people love a trilogy or mm-hmm. a completed series, I should say.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
So she was like, if you are self-publishing, you probably won't see success until your second or third book, depending yeah. on how, you know, how the market is. So also something to consider, like what we're doing is the long game, right? It is mm-hmm. just kind of like, success will not be immediate. Success will not be, you know, as soon as you publish. It's just going to take a second. And yeah. I feel like a lot of people don't realize that, mm-hmm. that it is just going to take a while. So you got to be patient with it, you know?
Yeah. No,
any kind of success.
I've definitely yeah. heard the same things that, like, the more you have in your backlog or your, you know, when people go to mm-hmm. your Amazon page and they see all these other books, that kind mm-hmm. of boosts your success because...
Yeah,
they'll read
right.
one. They'll read one book from you and see, oh, I like this, and there's more. So yeah, as opposed to
exactly.
having one, and that's all that's available. And then there's the fact that right. people like the completed series, like you said, because I know
yeah.
for me, I'm very hesitant to pick up an in progress series sometimes because George R. R. Martin is my favorite okay. author, but.
And... Oh God, I feel so bad now after ranting on him last week.
No, it's okay.
Oh, sorry.
He's my favorite, but I do have my criticisms. But no,
sure,
just I can see why having a completed trilogy would lead to better success just for that reason, because even
yeah,
I would rather just pick up the whole series at once
yeah.
when I can.
No, definitely. Cool.
Okay.
That
well,
was good.
Our next topic is one that I see people ask about a lot, writing process. And I guess we can tie the next topic into it as well, tools, because I'm sure they'll come up.
Sure.
So what does your writing process look like and what tools do you use?
First of all, what writing process? Second of all, that's the thing is I've used this excuse for long enough now that I have to actually just stop using it as an excuse is I don't have an established writing process. I have my writing nook, which I'm in right now, which is nice because it's mm-hmm. aesthetically cute and makes me feel cozy, but also apologies for the helicopter if you hear it.
No worries.
I think, okay. Follow my train of thought here. I grew up reading how to write books, a mm-hmm. lot of them. The invention of Instagram and then eventually TikTok now has inundated me with writing process videos. I have made a couple myself.
Yeah.
All very aesthetically based of like,
yeah.
this is how I write. And I will stick to something for about 2 weeks, just like the books say, just like the Bookstagram influencers say. And then by week three, I have just fallen back into old habits. So one is just myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not holding myself accountable, which is a bigger issue. Two, I think the issue with the writing process is that anytime I sit down to write,
mm-hmm.
my head's in a different space.
Yeah.
And I find it really hard to get back into where I was when I was on it
mm-hmm.
and then get out of it when I'm not.
Yeah.
It is... nigh impossible. I've done tips and tricks of like trying to write characters in different scenarios and, you know, pick a blurb off of the internet and try and create something from that to get your juices flowing. And I just, for some reason, have not been able to really get it honed down. So I don't have a writing process. When
yeah.
it clicks, it clicks. When it doesn't, it doesn't. Any smidgen of a writing process I have is very much just like sit at desk, have drink, and write. So I don't,
yeah.
you know, like I don't, whether it be water or wine or whatever. But
mm-hmm.
currently this writing process does not work for me. Your third question on the list. So no, it doesn't. And I think, so for the tools that I do have, going back to the Excel spreadsheet, word tracker slash any word tracker, I do find useful and I do find helpful. And when I see the ticker clicking down to the end goal, I panic, which puts me into the mindset of get your ass in gear.
Yeah.
So having that is helpful. I also do use Scrivener. I have worked with a couple other programs, but Living Writer was one of them, and they lost multiple chapters of mine, like, twice. So I was like, I'm done with this.
Yeah, I can.
Which sucked because I liked it. I have a physical notebook I write notebooks, or I write notes in. But Scrivener is my, just found I like the most. I like having the chapters individual chaptered in the sidebar. I like the notes section. I like the writing scroll. It can just open up to the whole computer screen and then it scrolls as you write. So you don't have any external stimulation, at least from the laptop. So that's pretty much the one that I use the most. Outlining is all physical. I have a whiteboard for that. I note it down, and yeah. So that's a very long-winded explanation of my lack of writing process.
That's okay. Actually, there's quite similar to mine when you said sit at desk, have drink, write. That's basically my writing process. That's literally it. Like, I'll usually have some ambient music going in the background too, just like very calm stuff, nothing too crazy, nothing with lyrics or anything like that. But other than that, I don't have like a strict process like some of these people do on BookTok and Instagram. Unfortunately, I don't have the I don't know what the word for it is. It, for kind of like you said, it's very difficult for me to force my head to get back to where it was. So it's hard for me to force myself into like the writing mood again as well. So it's also not like I don't have like a writing schedule. I just write when it comes right now. Because sometimes it's hard for me to force myself into that creative space. But yeah, I don't really have a writing process either. So I'm glad we're on the same page with that, because you see all the videos of people who have like these really cool setups and how they're like getting ready to sit down and write all day. And I'm like, that's cool, but I can't do it.
Now, you did mention music, and I forgot about music. And you mentioned no lyrics. I love listening. I have a playlist, but I also just have to, because I'm a mood reader, I'm also, as we were talking about, a mood writer. But I have to have the correct music to listen to, and almost all of mine contain lyrics. Some of it is like Game of Thrones like soundtrack, or like big movie soundtrack, but like almost all of mine have lyrics, and I tend to drown it out, which makes me focus more on the writing. I just now realized that. So interesting that you brought that up. Again, it's not blasting. Like, I can't have it in my ears. It's usually, like, on the Google Home or whatever. But, yeah, I found that it really does help set the mood and the tone of, like, especially for fantasy writers, you want to make sure you're kind of, like, enmeshed in the world you're about to walk into. Also, I'll, like, sometimes look at Pinterest for a bit. Like, just be like, okay, like, where's my Pinterest board? Okay, got it. We're in this. We've got the music going. We've got the candle and the thing. But people who have I sit down between the hours of 5 and 7 p.m. And I don't get up until I have 1,200 words. I'm like, and that's why you have a published book and I do not.
I'm just not built that way, I guess. But it's interesting that you write, that you can listen to lyrics and it actually helps you focus more, because it's totally the opposite for me. Like, if I listen to music with lyrics, I'd inevitably end up writing the song by mistake. Like, it would leech its way in.
Yeah. I don't know what that is. I don't know if that's just, like, post-college. Like, you get used to just doing stuff with, like, noise all the time. But, like,
could be.
And the same at work. I'll watch YouTube videos, like, at work, and then, like, realize I've missed half the video because I just kind of tunnel vision. So maybe that's just a trick I've unintentionally created for myself. Ash says I cannot listen to music, so no music at all. I love the variation on the music theme, or lack thereof.
Yeah,
because yeah, some people dig it, some people don't.
Yeah, I know I said I can't force myself into like a writing mood, but the music definitely does help set like the tone for whatever I'm about to write. I usually have like a specific song that will try to match the mood of what I'm going for.
I'll change it up. It's like D&D.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, we're about to get to a fight scene, so now we gotta put on this kind of music.
Pretty much.
Yeah. No, exactly.
I think you already covered.
Do you do any
tools? Sorry, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, do you use any tools? I mentioned a few.
So I've been very tempted to use Scrivener just because I hear a lot of good things about it. This might just be me channeling all the hours of George R. R. Martin interviews that I've listened to, but
yeah,
I'm kind of so. Are you aware of his setup? Do you know what he uses?
I'm not, again, not a huge fan.
That's okay. Of the he uses an ancient computer that is only capable of word processing, so it doesn't even have spell check. I don't go that extreme, but I will say that like the more bells and whistles that a tool has, the more likely I'll spend time playing around with those and actually writing. So what I've been using and what I am kind of very stubbornly sticking to is just Google Docs and Microsoft Word. Just because I find it lets me focus mostly on the writing, and I don't get easily distracted because there's not a lot of like fun stuff to do in Microsoft Word. Unless you're playing with like clip art or something, but I just kind of need simple, and I will say the organizational tools that I've heard about Scrivener having do sound like they would save me a lot of headache. Because right now I'm probably gonna have to fix it, but right now my draft is all one document, and it's like, oh, it's over 100 pages, and it's hard to find sometimes what I'm looking for specifically if I'm trying to go back to a certain point. So I will probably need to work on my organizational skills a little bit. I'm doing my best, but Docs and Word have limited functionality in that regard.
Yeah, I think that's why I like Scrivener as much as I do, because one, it's funny you mentioned him having like this old word processor. I feel like a few other authors do that. One that's coming to mind is Chuck Palahniuk. I don't know if you know who that is. He wrote Fight Club. And he's also written a few other books, pretty crazy stuff, but he's a very talented writer. And I think he uses like an old typewriter. He just is very like that old school, and he's only like in his mid 40s. But it seems to me that maybe that could be the trick for a lot of people. It's like, if you find yourself being too busy externally, maybe you need to narrow your focus. And that's why I enjoy the Scrivener's like ability to just like just be the page itself and like blot out everything else. Because what I found with Google Docs while I was trying to find like, do I just need to stick with Google Docs or do something else post betrayal of Living Writer? I was like, I do like having them chunked and parsed into chapters that I can click into the chapter and it's just that. And then I have the ability to kind of move with it. And then you have your note cards, but it has that like almost old 90s feel that the interface itself is like not that fancy.
Yeah.
It's like very just JavaScript-esque, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they do a free, like, 60-day trial, I think, or 30-day trial. So you can, like, give it a shot, and if you don't like it, you just don't pay the $60 for it.
Yeah.
But also, maybe Scrivener sponsor us. Just kidding. that would be that's, like, my only pick.
Speaking of that, our RSS, the distribution platform I use, does have access to, like, sponsorships. Like, it makes it easy to speak with sponsors and kind of be the middleman for that. So maybe one day we will have sponsors.
Maybe. But there we go.
Yeah, just the simpler the better for me, but I'm definitely going to give Scrivener a try because I put it off for too long, and it might help me get through this. It might help me get through this slump. I'm not sure. We'll see.
Yeah. There you go. Something new, something fun. I think that's also a good segue into our resources.
Yeah, definitely. So, sorry, I'm on the dock. Your weekly resource, would you like to share?
So my weekly resource is One Look Thesaurus. It is a free resource. And obviously it is a thesaurus, like, at the end of the day. That's what it is. However, what I love about it is that you can type in a phrase or a collection of words. Like, let's say you want to be like, I give him a mean look, but you can't come up with a nice way to say mean look, or like something more fluid or fancy. And it will give you other phrases that are similar to a mean look. And then you can narrow them down by like, do you want them to be more lyrical or funny or, you know, academic? Like, there's all these different ways that you can narrow down the search function that it's not just here's a similar word like a thesaurus. So I use it a lot just because I get stuck and I am a thesaurus whore. Like, I use a thesaurus a lot. I don't like to repeat words, but I also don't like to be super, you know, I don't know, fancy and start throwing in words that I don't also know. But the good thing about one look is that when you come down to phrasing and you're just kind of stuck, like, I don't know how to even get to a word that sounds like this phrase. It'll take your phrase and do that. And so it's just super, I don't know, I find it super helpful, better than just a regular thesaurus. And it's free. So that's my tool of the week.
That actually sounds awesome. And I can't believe that I did not like know about this earlier, because that would have saved me so many times of just sitting and staring at a sentence and be like, this is not right, but I don't know what word to put there.
And you could do like words of association. So like what I had in the doc as an example is like ooey gooey slimy. If you don't know like a word, if you're like, those are like the only words I can think of, but you want more than just another synonym, is and it'll come up with chunks of words for you to use that are similar. So it's not just like a one for one. So super fun.
That is very cool, and I will definitely be using that going forward quite a bit. That's not to go too far back, but I have used AI to tell, like, for that purpose before, because I didn't know this tool exists. But I've put in like to ChatGPT, like, I'm trying to say this and I don't know what the word is. Can you please tell me?
Give me a word that describes this feeling. But so if you don't want to stray too far into the AI world, not that ChatGPT can't be a really useful tool, especially when you're needing it for that. It's like, it's not writing it for you, but it is giving you some and helping you narrow down, especially those like weird kind of nebulous thought concepts. But yeah, for something simple, this is definitely a better bet.
Very cool. Well, my writing resource is not as cool as yours, but
I disagree.
You disagree?
I think this is a great resource. Okay. I disagree.
Well, mine is, I actually have two, so you have choices, but they're essentially the same thing. Wonder Draft and Incarnate. So these are both map making tools. I figured they'd be relevant since you and I are both fantasy authors, and most fantasy books have a map. Not all of them, but a lot of them do, because we like our maps. That said, as someone who's tried to commission a map before, it's not a very popular field in my experience to easily find affordable artists in, and sometimes you just want to do it yourself. I found it's hard to communicate with someone what I want a map to look like. So these are both map making tools that are very simple, very straightforward. You don't need any like you don't need to be proficient in like Photoshop or anything like that. They make the process very easy for you, even if you're not that literate when it comes to like cartography. They are both so Wonder Draft does come at a premium. I think it's $30 you gotta pay, and it's a one-time fee.
That's not bad.
Not at all. I have both, but Wonder Draft is a one-time payment, and then you download it and you can make your maps, and it'll help you like get it ready for print and get it in the style that you want, and you can knock them out pretty quickly. And then Incarnate pretty much has the same functionality as Wonder Draft. Theirs is subscription-based, so you can join for free and make maps for free. In order to use them for commercial use, like to put it in your book or something, you do have to pay it for like 1 month or something, which I think the cheapest here is like $5. So both very affordable and very easy tools to use. And I have not found anything better. So if you need to make a map and you don't want to pay someone else to do it, these are very affordable and very user-friendly tools to get that done. And if you're like me and you just like playing around making maps for no reason that you're never going to use, they're also fun.
I just want to show what happens when you don't know about resources like Wonder Josh and Incarnate.
Yeah.
You literally just look like a toddler. For those who might just be listening in the future, yeah. Like, I was doing the macaroni way where you just, like, scatter noodle macaroni on your piece of paper. Yeah, anyway, totally love this because if not, it just looks like a 2-year-old drew it. I think it's extremely helpful.
Yeah, I do have a few of those, like, poorly drawn hand maps that are my for my eyes only, no one else's. But
yeah, it's a rite of passage for any fantasy author who wants a map in their book. It's like, you gotta at least attempt it.
Yeah.
Because it'll humble you really quick. Mm-hmm. Super quick.
I just have it, like, in the corner of my desk when I need to reference where things are. But I need a I need a prettier version for print. I also feel like it. You know, like when your doctor writes you a note, like, I'm the only one who understands what I'm looking at here because it's...
Right. I did try and, like, recreate it on Procreate, and I did a fairly decent job because I bought, like, a toolkit on Etsy. Can you not tell, like, Etsy is the place that I go for everything? But I got it, and it had, like, stamps that you could use. So it had, like, different trees and castles and rivers and, like, dots and lines. So I did a fairly decent job, but I'm absolutely going to give these two a shot because it sounds like it'll just be... Oh, nice.
It definitely saves a lot of time and headache. I've done them in Photoshop before, but you have to be a lot more proficient in design tools to get that done. These tools kind of do a lot of the work for you and just let you kind of draw the shapes and whatnot. That is my writing resource for the week. I guess it's not really for writing in particular, but for publishing and
for
printing.
Craft.
Yeah. So for writing topics, is there anything we didn't touch on that you wanted to go back to, or you think we're good there? I know we covered a lot today, so
I think we did. It was a very jam-packed episode. I think maybe next week we'll talk more about AI and kind of that realm as it relates to writing, because I think that's a really interesting topic. We talked about, like, ChatGPT for a second, about its use and maybe ability to be a tool in writing, but also the realm of where that is or isn't there. I feel like there's a ton of debate on Book Talk about that, especially when it assists with writing. So I think that would be something I would like to talk about more, but when we have more time.
Yeah, for sure.
Other than that, I don't think I have anything else. What about you?
Not really. Definitely excited to talk about AI more in the future, though, because I have I have so much to say on that, and I think I think it's a really relevant topic, obviously, especially today. So that'll be a fun episode. No, I'm good on the writing topics, and let me see who's in chat here so I can know who to ask questions to. If anyone is in the chat and anyone has any questions or feedback for us, please let us know. Sorry for the technical difficulties today. I don't know what went wrong in the beginning, but hopefully it was smooth sailing from there.
I'll get a better mic eventually. We'll figure it out.
You have the Rode mic?
I do have the Rode mic. I just need to figure out the input because when I plug it into my phone, I can only use my phone. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work on the iPad.
Yeah.
I plug it into my phone, it's only input and I can never hear you. And if I do my Bluetooth and then plug it in, I still can't hear. So I've got to troubleshoot still.
That's okay. I think we
hopefully by next week
both got some bugs to work out. But
Kat, you're sorry to interrupt.
No, you're okay.
But yes, bugs will be inevitable for the rest of your future. It's just how it goes. Kat, Milanote. Also very good. Yes, I have used it before. Ross, my boyfriend, uses it a lot for work. It's like, how would you describe it, Kat? It's like a mood board creator situation. It's like just like an open concept site where you can just kind of add pictures and then make word maps and do all this cool stuff.
Oh, okay.
There's a name for it, and I'm blanking on the name for it. And yeah, Drag and Drop. Map maker. There you go. It also does, I think, let me look up the exact wording.
Yeah, I've never used that tool before, but it sounds like a good one.
They're like, it's a way to organize visual boards. So if you're like a visual board person, it's really easy to like upload and pin stuff to it and like make little notes. And then if you want to like, I don't know, word map stuff. So you're like, oh, here's the overarching theme. And then in this chapter, we do this and this and this. It's very really cool. Easy to do.
Yeah.
Good one.
Well, I have lots of great resources to try after today. So
yeah, there you go. The whole point of showing them. Cool. Well, if no one else has any questions, I think we're really good at ending like 2 or 3 minutes before our hour and a half slot. So
for sure, we've hit the goal time every time so far, even though it's only been twice. But
twice, crushing it.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks everyone for joining. Thanks, Ash, for being my co-host and
thanks, Brandon, of course,
keeping me on track.
Sorry for the interruptions. That's my MO. But
no, that's okay.
This has been really good so far. Good, awesome. Good balance.
Well, cool. If everything goes well, I think I'll see you next week.
See you next week. Talk to you later, guys.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye.